All right, freaks, throwing the ads in the beginning of this episode of the Rabbit Hole Recap, this edition of Rabbit Hole Recap, whatever you want to refer to it as, is brought to you by the Cash App. All right, as you freaks know, Cash App is the easiest way to stack sats in the States, and now it's going to be the simplest way to help you grow your money. Introducing Cash App Investing. It probably doesn't need to be introduced anymore. We've been introducing it every week for quite a while now, so you should be aware of it. And again, don't get angry, all right? The option is there. You can stack slivers of stocks if you want to. Unlike investing tools that only let you buy entire shares of stocks, Cash App Investing is letting you buy as little as $1. So when your favorite stock is just a little too expensive, if you want to buy it, you can buy as little as $1. You don't have to buy the whole stock. I know Tesla was running up this week. Somebody actually tweeted at us that they were happy that they were able to DCA into Tesla using the Cash App once they introduced.
They were stacking stonks?
They were stacking stonks of Tesla and sats, all right? If you don't want to stack the stonks, you don't have to. Because Cash App is directly connected to your bank account, there are no 4 to 5 day waiting periods for inbound transfers. So you can start investing today. Brokerage services are provided by Cash App Investing, a subsidiary of Square, and member SIPC. As always, use the code STACKINGSATS, all right? If you have not used the code STACKINGSATS, if you do not have the Cash App, and if you're worried about KYC Bitcoin, and you don't want to like buy from a KYC exchange, you just download the Cash App anyway because you get incredible deals with the Boost program and all that. Use the code STACKINGSATS. You're going to get $10, and then $10 is going to go to our friends at Owls Lacrosse. Stacking Sats. Go to your local app store today and download it. And it would be remiss if we didn't shout out our great friends at Unchained Capital, who have been with us for quite a while now. They're an incredible team working on Bitcoin financial services for you freaks out there. If you're Bitcoiners looking to not sell your Bitcoin, they're going to do many things for you. One, again, if you don't want to sell your Bitcoin and you want to get liquid, they have their Bitcoin collateralized loans. You can put Bitcoin in a multi-sig where you have control of one key and they can't move it off the exchange unless you sign it. You could use that Bitcoin as collateral, again, to get U.S. dollar liquidity loans so you don't have to sell your Bitcoin. And then on top of that, already mentioned, they have incredible multi-sig products. They're helping you with private or security and with their multi-sig. So you can engage in a multi-sig quorum with Unchained, in which they'll hold a key, and you can hold two others or whatever the N of M setup is if you ever need cash or not cash up. If you ever need Unchained to sign for you to move your coins, they're there for you. And on top of that, they're doing incredible work in the open source space. Their multi-sig quorum setup has been open source in the form of Caravan. So if you don't want Unchained in the quorum, they've open sourced their solution for you. You can do it yourself. Use multiple wallets. I believe they're working on cold card integration as well. And then on top
of damn time.
On top of that, they've got Slip 39, Hermit, and as we mentioned in this episode, you'll hear Parker Lose is doing some incredible blogging on Gradually Then Suddenly.
Go read his shit.
www.unchained-capital.com. That's unchained-capital.com. Enjoy this episode. It was a long rip. We had a lot of fun. Okay. Coronavirus, is it?
Are we live?
Yeah, is it hype? Is it real?
You seem to be freaking out this week, Marty.
I've been going back and forth, range of emotions here.
I thought we were all chill ending RHR last week, and now...
I don't know, man. What's really going on out there? Do we have to be worried?
Are you happy that I brought you masks, like a good friend?
I am. I didn't even know it was for that. I thought you just had extras laying around. You're just like, hey, here.
Well, I mean, I had extras from like the last freak out.
Ebola?
Like, you don't buy the masks now when everyone's freaking out. You just... You fucked up. Masks are too expensive. You might as well just die. Like, I feel like, who wants to buy the top of the mask market?
The mask market's going crazy, right? You see that Japanese mask producer stock?
Yeah. So, like, after this settles down, you should go out and buy, you know, like 50 N95 masks just to have.
Just to have.
A good thing to have.
I think Ragnar just tweeted this. It's better to be a year early than a day late.
Yeah. And then you get the feeling... This is like similar to what like some type of like hyper Bitcoinization event might feel like, where like everyone's just scrambling to buy Bitcoin and they're FOMOing and the price goes up.
Very good point.
But yeah, it seems like this might not be just our typical flu scare, right?
Yeah. Though I don't.
Not doctors. We're not doctors.
We're not doctors. And though I don't respect his shitcoinery, that dude Crypto Bitlord is in Beijing right now. He posted a video in the streets of Beijing at rush hour. It was completely empty.
So they're freaking out.
Yeah. And like, that's the other thing, like,
and the Chinese must be lying about the numbers.
Exactly.
Right?
That's the thing that's freaking me out. Like, what are the real numbers?
And the numbers we know are not great, right?
Yeah.
It's worse than SARS, but SARS really wasn't that bad, right?
Yeah. But then you also have to take in consideration, like, what's it, like 40 to 50,000 people die from the flu every year?
Yeah. And like, people just die in cars all the time.
Yeah. Are we freaking out? Are we not freaking out enough? I don't know. I'm confused. This is like one instance where I'm like very confused.
Did you see Pom's picture?
Yeah, on the plane.
He's like, I'm taking zero risk or whatever. And he was wearing like the cheapest mask ever.
As loose as possible.
At all.
Yeah.
Supposedly the masks help more for if someone's infected, they won't infect other people than actually protecting you. And you don't want to rub your eyes. People shouldn't rub their eyes.
Wash your hands as much as possible.
Use eye drops if your eyes are itchy. My eyes are itchy just talking about it. Now I can't rub them.
I've been washing my hands a lot. Do you think it's in New York yet?
Yeah, absolutely. We're the center of the world, man.
Yeah.
The scary part is if it's actually true that there's a 15-day incubation period without showing symptoms, you can pass it on. Then that's like the key. That's always the key variable that really makes these things easy to spread.
It's all like this. The hype cycle around the start of what, like 7 days ago? So we probably have another week until symptoms begin showing, or within a week, symptoms in some major... I mean, there's two cases in LA that were discovered today, I believe.
Yeah, people are freaking out. I don't know. I don't want to like jinx it, but I tend to question the hysteria. But,
yeah,
it's good to be prepared.
Well, yeah, especially considering the hysteria is perfectly timed for an excuse for a global economic slowdown, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Oh, it was coronavirus, wasn't the shit?
We would have just kept pumping if the coronavirus didn't hit us.
Yeah, that's what they're going to say.
If it actually, we might just keep pumping, though.
I don't know. I'm freaks.
Like, electronic costs are going to go up, you know, because of everything slowing down in China. So
they shut down Foxconn.
You're going to run a node. You should get your supplies now, at least if you want to do it in the short term. The big thing, what do they say? They said it's like 2% fatality. The big thing is like, be a healthy person. Like, maybe the most positive thing people can get out of this is, you know, like, take care of yourself going forward. Like, the best, like, better than a mask is like being a healthy individual.
It's a very good point. Your immune system is much better when you're working out, eating correctly.
So like, if you want to freak out, fine, but like, be healthier.
Yeah, I need to sleep more. I haven't been sleeping.
Yeah, sleep more, Marty. Be healthier.
I've been watching. I mean, I live a pretty healthy lifestyle. I work out. I eat healthy.
He works out, guys.
I'm jacked. Yoked. Yeah. Honestly, very confused. I've spoken with a lot of people who are very scared. I've spoken with a lot of people who are very skeptical. I don't have all the information. I don't know. I do not know. That was our thoughts on the coronavirus. Let's go into more pleasant things. We have a shout out this week. Shout out to our boy, CK Snarks. CK_Snarks.
Oh, fuck yes.
At the POV Crypto Podcast. Remind the freaks that Bitcoin is an anti-fragile beast and it thrives in chaos. Almost everything is good for Bitcoin, including the coronavirus. I mean, it has been pumping this week.
Did he put coronavirus in there, or is he just insinuating it?
No, this was sent like right after last week's podcast. So coronavirus
was
insinuating
it.
Yeah. Coronavirus was just starting to take off there.
You heard it here first, freaks. CK thinks coronavirus is good for Bitcoin.
It's his words, not ours.
Well, like, I joked about it last time, and then the Financial Times released their bullshit ass Alphaville post where they quoted the XRP people saying that we're crazy for saying it's good for Bitcoin.
Yeah, yeah. That, what's her name?
I forget her name. It's not a memorable name.
Yeah. I mean, the Ripple shills came out saying it was bullish for Ripple. Specifically, and then they took that and said it was Bitcoiners saying that.
And then we had Nathaniel Popper had a bullshit FUD Bitcoin article.
Bitcoin's been dying a slow death the last 3 months.
Except for criminals. Criminals use it. And then, like, buried in it, it was like less than 1% of usage is illicit usage.
Yeah, and then he like pumped a chart that's showing overall US dollar volume of Bitcoin exchanged on these dark markets, comparing it to 2015 when Bitcoin's market cap was significantly smaller. So if you're even talking about like percentage of overall usage, it seems to have fallen actually.
The problem with journalists like Nathaniel Popper is they
I love this tweet.
They fucking grandstand about not buying Bitcoin because they'll have bias. And then they sit there and they watch it go 100x and they become salty as fuck and they inherently get biased.
The other direction, yeah.
Like, I remember I presented in front of a bunch of GE executives in like 2014, 2015, and it was like part of a fintech week where they were getting all these presentations, you know, to learn about new fintech. And me and Popper were invited to present on the Bitcoin side of things. And I gave them like a full red pill presentation about how you could send payments to Iran and sanctions couldn't stop you and shit. And they did not like that at all. I was still young Bitcoiner and I was learning, you know, you have to frame it properly for your audience or whatever. And Popper was there and he was shilling his digital gold book that he released, right?
Right up here on my bookshelf.
Yeah, so he wrote this book about Bitcoin. He called out the main value prop in the title, digital gold, you know, way ahead of a lot of these Silicon Valley people, but he didn't buy any. And he was, at that point, he was grandstanding about not owning any, you know, and here we are, and it probably just eats him up inside.
Hey, Nathaniel, if you're listening, it's never too late to buy. You can buy a fraction of a Bitcoin, I hope you know. I know the New York Times may not be paying you that well, but I don't know what your salary is. I'm kidding.
I think the responsible thing for journalists that cover Bitcoin is if they get Bitcoin, then it makes sense. Like, once you start to understand Bitcoin, you just want to accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible. So if they're covering Bitcoin, of course they're going to want to accumulate Bitcoin. They should just admit it. Just buy some and just give a disclosure that you own some.
Yeah, disclosure.
We own some Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's sad to see. Like, especially the two New York Times journalists, him and Vigna, have...
He also didn't buy any, I think.
Yeah.
And then Casey got completely red-pilled.
Yeah, now he's
Michael
like...
Michael Casey.
Isn't he an editor at CoinDesk now?
I don't know where he is now, but... I think he was with MIT helping with their digital currency initiative for a little bit.
I think why do I think he's at CoinDesk? I might be wrong on
but
this.
But he's all the way down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Yeah. The two different routes you can take.
Just think about the information you're getting from the mainstream, specifically when it pertains to Bitcoin. You have people who may be a little butthurt that they didn't get on the train when they knew more than most of the world. We're going to throw the ads in at the end.
We'll put them in the front.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Thanks again, CK, for the shout out. I love the shout outs, freaks. They make me happy. It's not even like about the money. It's just I get happy when we get the shout outs. CK has a podcast, POV Crypto Pod, which the worst part about that podcast is the name, because I hate the name crypto, and they have a lot of ETH guests on, and his co-host is an ETH head. David Hoffman, but I went on that podcast and it's a really good battle of ETH versus Bitcoin, so you should go check out that episode.
Yeah, go peep that. And we also got to give a shout out to the man who provided us with the beers we're currently enjoying right now, at Justin Filson on Twitter.
And we got bottle openers too, right?
Yeah, they're over there.
I love it.
Yeah,
I love when you freaks send us random shit. It's fantastic.
Yeah, we have a Wall Street address too. We're in the belly of the beast.
The big leagues.
Yeah.
Have we been corrupted?
I think so. All right, let's jump into it. Big week, specifically with coin joins and people getting flagged by exchanges for engaging in coin joins after they move their UTXOs off exchange.
It's another withdrawal flag.
A withdawal flag. Not a
deposit flag.
So I wrote about this earlier this week. There was a Bitcoiner, Ronald McHoddled, on
that's his born name, his birth name on his birth certificate has that.
It's Ronald McHoddled. And now he tagged Matt, myself, and Jeff Andrew in a tweet in which he showed a screenshot of an email he got from Paxos, which is a Bitcoin exchange. Not very popular. It's the first time I've like heard Paxos in the news in quite a while.
Paxos has the stablecoin that's what they're popular for.
Yeah. So apparently You're not allowed to do what you want with your Bitcoin once you own the keys. Fortunately, that's not how Bitcoin works, but the level of chain analysis here is alarming. What is the correct response? That was his tweet. And so essentially, that started a whole thread and a conversation, and we came to know that he sent Bitcoin off an exchange to a private wallet, a personal wallet that was not involved with CoinJoin. He did one hop to a personal wallet that he controlled, and then he sent it to Wasabi.
And then he mixed. So he did do the one hop technique, which is what a lot of people... Well, first of all, Ronald McHoddled is a great name. Second of all, the people he tagged, two podcasters and a lawyer. That's like a nice ratio for this type of situation.
Yeah, I like that.
He did the one hop thing, and actually he had to do the one hop thing in this case because Paxos doesn't send to
segment addresses. 32
addresses. Yeah, so he had to do one hop anyway. The idea with the one hop is you have some plausible deniability. Maybe you sent it to someone else and then they withdrew. But it appears that he was practicing, you know, best practices when using one of these KYC exchanges, and he was withdrawing every time through the same method. So like really, you don't really get plausible deniability if every single withdrawal goes one hop and then goes to Wasabi. This is the fourth time a Wasabi transaction has been flagged. Recently, it's the second one recently. I think there was a Paxful one, there's a Bitfinex one, there was a
Binance
Singapore, and then there was this one.
Yes.
And the key here is I'm pretty sure that the flagging that's happening is based on the fixed Wasabi fee address, which we've talked about in the past. So Wasabi uses this fixed address, and because they use this fixed address, every transaction that goes through their CoinJoin, pretty much every, some don't pay the fee, but pretty much every transaction that goes through the CoinJoin pays the Wasabi coordinator fee. And it's at least party to the transaction that pays the Wasabi coordinator fee. So it's one step away from a lot of alleged criminal activity. Specifically, in this case, recently, it has been this Plus Token Ponzi scheme, which also paid the Wasabi fee. So in chain analysis tools, you're one hop away. Now, there's some nuance here. Yes, you can still see on chain that a Wasabi transaction happened if they didn't have the fixed fee address. But the thing is, these exchanges, you know, part of the way anti-money laundering laws are written is they're supposed to make a best attempt at policing suspicious activity. And there is absolutely no plausible deniability for them if you're paying this fixed fee address every time. If on their chain analysis software it comes up that you're two hops away from the Plus Token scam, then they have to ask questions. They can't like turn a blind eye. I think, of course, there will still be exchanges that block CoinJoin, you know, transactions with the CoinJoin history. KYC laws suck. Regulatory overreach sucks. That probably will still happen. But way more will not be able to turn a blind eye to this fixed fee address. It's low-hanging fruit. It needs to be removed. We've been very vocal about it lately, but I've been talking to them about it for like 6 months, 8 months now, and it's still fucking in there, and it's extremely frustrating.
Yeah, especially for us, as we've pumped Wasabi in the past.
We shilled the shit out of Wasabi. As a user of Wasabi, it's fucking annoying. So really, like, if you're gonna Wasabi after in this case, if he's pulling off every single time, Paxos maybe has a little bit of Bitcoin or funds that he has on his exchange wallet, but you can kind of walk away. That's why you have to keep withdrawing, always be withdrawing, so the amount of money you have on these exchanges, if they decide to freeze your account, is minimized. But really, like, the best practices is probably going into Whirlpool first and then going to Wasabi. And at that point, you might as well just stay in Whirlpool. So it's like, I don't know, it's extremely frustrating. And But this is a concern that everyone, you should always assume that this could happen, whether it's a deposit or whether it's a withdrawal, that a coin that has some CoinJoin history in its past, might get flagged and they might ask more questions, But I don't And we this is confirmed too, by the way, because Paxos responded on Twitter, which was an interesting tactic by them. So
I was actually surprised to see that.
Yeah, so they've essentially confirmed it. But yeah, I don't, you know, or if not Whirlpool, use the, you know, Join Market, which is more advanced. But
yeah, so there's a little bit more nuance to this. Apparently, there's like a consortium of exchanges that have joined a regulatory band, I guess you could say, the CIOS exchanges and BitLicense exchanges.
And but these are two different groups.
Two different groups, yes. But it seems like exchanges that are reaching out to regulators saying, hey, we're going to cooperate with these particular, with the BitLicense.
Wait, so what do they call that group? They called it the Participate Partnership Group, Participate Group?
Yes, that.
Group Participate. Our boy 6102 Bitcoin created a CoinJoin flagging hub that shows all the flags that have happened that we know about and lists them based on these working groups that they have. So as Marty said, there's the people that are involved in the BitLicense, which Paxos is one of them. And then there's the people that are part of the CIOS exchanges. And the CIOS exchanges, that came out relatively recently.
Yeah, it was like under the radar until, like, nobody knew about it until 6102 surfaced it.
Well, it was in an article that was released a couple days ago, and he picked it up and started publicizing it. The members include Scotiabank, Binance, Bitfinex, Chainalysis, Bitfury, BitPay, Paxful, Blockchain Alliance, CipherTrace, and Elliptic.
Yeah, not ugly bedfellows there. And so now it begs the question, is this an inherent flaw in Bitcoin or is it an inherent flaw in the touching of the traditional financial or where the points at which Bitcoin touches the traditional financial system, which is an interesting debate to have. Obviously, we've talked about this plenty of times on this podcast. Today, we think I can say this confidently for man. I think we believe that Bitcoin's fungibility assurances are a bit subpar at the moment. They can definitely get better. But with that being said, this is also a product of the regulations that are in place. I think I'm confident in saying that Matt would agree with this too, that the KYC AML regulations are a bit arduous.
They're
and
dangerous.
Very
They're
dangerous.
Not effective.
Yes.
And if I mean, the perfect example here is if we lived in this theoretical, perfect, circular Bitcoin economy, where you don't buy Bitcoin, you spend it, and you don't sell Bitcoin. You don't sell Bitcoin, you spend it. You don't buy Bitcoin,
you
earn it.
You receive it, yeah.
Then you don't have these issues. It's where fiat comes into pictures. Then all of a sudden, you have these super regulated entities that do have to make a best attempt. That's why it's so frustrating when the Wasabi people say, oh, you can detect a Wasabi coin join anyway without the fixed fee address. It's like, it's all about, you know, playing the game here. You know, like, no one wants to interact with KYC services, but if you are, they have to play the game, you have to play the game, and no one can really say what's happening out loud. Without a doubt, definitively flagging every single Wasabi transaction as a Wasabi transaction by using that fixed fee address is like the worst fucking practice ever.
Yeah, and it's really frustrating because again, like the KYC AML regulations are extremely arduous, overarching in my opinion. And one of my favorite takes under Ronald McCottle's threads was by a Twitter account, NoisyMouse27F. And he said, imagine taking cash out of an ATM and then swap the notes with same amount of value with a stranger on the street and a banker jumping out of nowhere and tells you that you're not permitted to do that. It's essentially what happened.
But I mean, the bankers, the regulators would tell you that if they had that capability, they would absolutely do it.
Really?
Yeah, if they could actually police you swapping cash on the street, they would absolutely police that.
All right, so think about
this. They want to police every... That's why I feel like we all agree on that. Like, that's not really that productive to me because they don't fucking care. Like, there's no reasoning with regulators in this regard.
Yeah, well, and then that's a good segue into the next point I wanted to make. Let's think about who these regulators are. These are alphabet soup organizations like the Financial Action Task Force, which is a task force of unelected bureaucrats who decide when and when you cannot move money around the world. And again, unelected bureaucrats. Nobody elected these people to write these laws. They are just formed by the banking system and then forced on people. So these, again, unelected bureaucrats are trying to control how you can spend money. Like, wake the fuck up, people. This is the state of the world today. You plebs have no control. You have no agency over your life. And if you try to take agency over your life and try to get privacy with your Bitcoin, they will try to stop you. They want to control the way you move money. They want to control your actions. They don't want you to take agency of your life. We need people to start speaking up against this. And this is why we do this podcast and the newsletter. It's getting to a dire point, I think.
And it's untenable long term because, you know, we can't expect like regular Bitcoin merchants to be doing chain analysis on all the fun. If that ever hits that point, like the fear that people have where, you know, you have blacklisted Bitcoin and non-blacklisted Bitcoin, like Bitcoin has failed. It is worthless at that point. So if there are somehow effective at trying to police this and enforce this, which I don't think they would be, then Bitcoin will adapt and evolve or die. Like, that's what will happen, whether that's protocol improvements or whether that's tools built on the side. Like, there's a natural incentive to make that happen, because otherwise Bitcoin won't have any. If people can't, it doesn't matter if you want to privately spend Bitcoin. If people can't privately spend Bitcoin, it's done.
Yeah, and no, it's the hard truth.
I'm optimistic, fortunately, but like, people need to fucking care about it. Like, people should realize, like, I don't, if Cash App, disclosure, they're a sponsor, Cash App, if Cash App started blocking my account because I everything I withdraw from Cash App, I CoinJoin. You know, originally it was with Wasabi, now it's with Whirlpool. If they decide to block my account, then I will say good riddance and I'll stop using them and I will move to another service. And if it keeps happening, then I will make something work, you know, but there is no situation here where I'm going to stop doing it.
No. And brings up another good point. Like, more people need to start doing it. And the concept of taint every UTXO, not like taint in the regulator's view is bad, but taint can also be good if it's just, hey, this is normalizing coin joining is what we should do. So we need more bull Bitcoins out there.
And that's what I like what 6102 said. He's like, what can you do to help? Coin joining funds. What else can you do to help? Whenever you spend Bitcoin, spend coin joined funds.
Right.
And spread them out.
Yeah. And it's getting, yeah, the war is on, freaks. It's here. It's upon us. Speak up. That's the thing. A lot of people just don't speak up. It could be a simple action as saying, hey, I, as an individual, should be innocent until proven guilty. I should be allowed to have financial privacy. It is my money. I should be able to do whatever the fuck I want with it.
There's another element here, right? So, like, if the guy responds back to Paxos and is like, yeah, I did use CoinJoin to protect my transactional privacy, maybe they won't block his account. We don't know that next step, right? Like, they have to ask a question. He's already fully KYC'd. They know who he is, right? Yeah. So I'm curious if he responds and, you know, admits to it, like, because he didn't, it's not in their terms of service and he didn't commit a crime. So it may just be that, just simply let us ask more questions.
Yeah.
I'm still not cool with that, but that could easily, you know, just to tone it back a little bit on that note.
Yeah, no, let's not forget, these are regulations thrown on these exchanges too.
That's what I'm saying. They have to make a best effort.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they get shut down.
So go after the regulations, not the people who are forced to enforce them. And this is all. So this all started with like the Bank Secrecy Act in 1970. Since then, the early 70s, man, really fucked up the money world. Since the Bank Secrecy Act was signed in 1970, Dan McArdle brought this up in the thread. It's forced banks and financial institutions to play the role of police, and that shouldn't be the role of these institutions. They should just be businesses that handle people's money. The role of enforcement and detective work should be put to law enforcement, not these financial institutions. So yeah, that was a rip on that instance. It's going on. You got to speak up.
And also, just, we've said this in the past, but there's always you know, my DMs are open. If you ever have any issues with an exchange or service blocking or flagging a deposit or a withdrawal that has used CoinJoin, definitely let us know. Just send me a DM.
Yeah.
We won't say your name or whatever. Like, we can keep it as private as you want. But just always feel free to reach out.
Yeah. And here we segue into how CoinJoins are getting more sophisticated. We got a couple articles from the incredible technical writer at Bitcoin Magazine, Aaron Van Weerdom, who's been on this beat for quite a while.
Popper, actually bought Bitcoin.
Yes. Aaron, I mean, yeah, most of you freaks, I'm pretty sure, are aware of who he is, but if you're not, he's one of the best technical journalists out there when it comes to
Bitcoin.
He's
Aaron Van W on Twitter. Right?
Yes.
Follow him.
So he's got two articles, one on PaySwap, which is a privacy proposal, which is...
by Z-Man. We talked about that. We mentioned it briefly with the Matt and Val pod.
Yeah. So...
which if you haven't listened to, you should go listen to that.
Yeah, definitely go check that out. Money Pod. So we're going to link to that. He's also got a piece, an updated piece on a CoinJoin proposal that was actually dropped in 2017, but I guess there's some updates or he just wanted to refresh people's memories. Knapsack. I admittedly am not...
Knapsack came back up because of Cash Fusion, which was a similar proposal that just came out. PaySwap is like kind of similar to PayJoin. We'll start with that. But with PayJoin, just to refresh the freak's mind, PayJoin is when you pay you pay someone.
When you go to a merchant, you pay them, they create an output,
have to be a merchant, but
Yeah. You just both create output, so you mix your change together.
It's a CoinJoin transaction between you and the merchant. In merchant situation, works really well because both PaySwap and PayJoin, you need interactivity. You need both people to be online. Obviously, the sender's already online, and with BTC Pay, the receiver's online, right? So it could work. PaySwap is a slightly different take. With PayJoin, it's one transaction. With PaySwap, it's two independent transactions. So you send a full UTXO to the merchant with no change, and then the merchant sends you another transaction back, a separate transaction back that includes your change.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it has a higher fee burden and chain burden. Also has the same issue as PayJoin where it needs to be interactive, where it needs to be online. But it uses HTLCs in order to handle that trust model where you need to make sure both people send the transaction. With PayJoin, you know, you're signing a shared transaction.
Yes.
There's
more CoinJoin schemes coming to market. But
Knapsack and Cash Fusion... I do not think that makes sense to me. I just put it in there because it's a good explanation of what Aaron does a good job. But Cash Fusion and Cash Shuffle, I think, is similar. They've been getting these unequal CoinJoin rounds because both PaySwap and PayJoin are unequal, but it's just between you and one other person, and it's a nice just additional privacy improvement that happens. But with Knapsack and Cash Fusion and Cash Shuffle, it's supposed to be like more like these routine rounds like we see with Wasabi and Whirlpool, but instead of equal outputs, it's all outputs of all different amounts. And I don't think the math really makes sense to me. So I would like to see that in like a working implementation before I would be convinced of that being effective. But there's so many nuances, like especially when you go down the rabbit hole of like timing analysis and stuff that can fuck you in these Charmian CoinJoin model, you know, Whirlpool and Wasabi, where you have the rounds of multiple equal outputs, you can still fuck that up post mix. This seems like even easier to fuck up is basically I don't see if it actually gives you any kind of practical privacy.
Yeah, that's what Aaron said in his article. Knapsack mixing is not quite as private as equal amount mixes. Equal amount mixes essentially allow for a maximum amount of configurations, necessarily more than even the best Knapsack mix, and perhaps more notably, Knapsack mixing still allows for some linking of certain inputs and outputs, or at least more likely linkages. Let's just segue, while we're on the topic of CoinJoins and fungibility and privacy, segue into BIP Taproot, which has been broken down into three BIPs, which were given assigned BIP numbers last week, BIP 340, BIP 341, and BIP 342. This would basically lead the way to, I believe, yes, 340 would enable Schnorr signatures. People would begin to create public-private key pairs with Schnorr signatures. ECDSA would still be around. Obviously, it's got to be backwards compatible. BIP 341 would initiate SegWit version 1. We're on SegWit version 0 right now. The way the BEC32 addresses work out, there's 16 versions of SegWit that can be implemented. So we're going to move initiate SegWit version 1.0 in the BEC32 address scheme, and that will make it compatible with Schnorr signatures. And then BIP 342, I believe, is the addition of Taproot.
BIP, BIP, hooray.
BIP, BIP, hooray. Sorry for getting cheesy with that headline. And so these BIPs, if they get implemented into the protocol, would move the ball forward to the path to better fungibility. And one thing we have to be clear, it's not going to be like ironclad out of the gate. Peter Willow came out. There's a lot of misconceptions about SIG aggregation. That's a lot of people are assuming that's going to be possible.
It's not.
With these BIPs, it's not.
Not cross-input.
Yeah, cross-input aggregation. That's what it is.
SIG aggregation. Yeah, the big thing that comes here short-term is, to distill it down, is better, cheaper and more private multi-SIG and Lightning open closes. That's what you get.
Essentially, yes. So, and there's still things that could be implemented after that to, again, provide better fungibility via SIG aggregation.
And it's more private in that you can't tell it's a multi-SIG or what the configuration of that multi-SIG is. You can't tell if it's like right now, like if you do multi-SIG, you can tell it's a 2 of 2, which is what the Lightning open closes are. You can tell if it's a 2 of 7 or a 2 of 5. Now they'll all just look the same. So it doesn't actually give you like any transactional privacy. It does. There's so much nuance and other shit. Of course it does. Like there's like little indicators that they use to also track your transactions. One of those is, oh, this is a 2 of 7 multisig. This is a 1 of 2 multisig.
Yes. So it certainly helps.
Yeah.
But again, it's not the end all be all. This is going to be an ongoing battle throughout time.
It's not some like massive privacy improvement.
No. But the BIPs were assigned numbers. They're got to be debated. And that's the one thing Peter said. He thinks these proposals are sufficient, and it's out of his hands and the people that worked on those BIPs with him, and it's up to users to debate whether or not they want it implemented into the protocol. So this is time to start the conversation.
If you have an issue with Taproot or any of these BIPs, you know, comment underneath our Twitter.
Yes, please.
I haven't had, like, I've been trying to get people to give me
I haven't
critiques.
Heard, yeah.
That's why I asked Matt on the podcast and got like offended.
Right?
He's like, no, I don't have any issues with Taproot. Why are you asking me? I don't know, because I don't either. I was wondering. No, I want to hear the criticism.
No, that's one thing we talked about on that podcast too. People are a lot of battle scars from the SegWit implementation.
Definitely go listen to that if you haven't.
Yeah, and then another BIP that was assigned a number last week was BIP CTV check template verify. And that's Jeremy Rubin's BIP, which would help create a new opcode that would help with covenants and transaction congestion and the mempool and a bunch of other stuff and Bitcoin vaults, most importantly, I think. And that got assigned BIP 119. I think Jeremy is doing a BIP CTV workshop in San Francisco this weekend as well.
And we're sponsoring some of that, right?
Yeah, we're buying the lunch for those people.
That's so cool. I love doing that shit.
Yeah.
That makes me happy.
We're gonna buy lunch for anybody at the OpCTV workshop in San Francisco this weekend. Yeah, go check out the episode with Jeremy if you haven't already. We go over that opcode in depth. It's going to enable a lot of cool things if it's implemented, specifically with paying people. Like if you're a company, want to pay people, it makes that a lot easier and less burdensome on the chain. And let you get very granular with how your transactions are pushed through the mempool.
Makes like batching easier, right?
Yeah. It makes it more granular.
KYCP.org got a nice refresh update. Have you checked it out? It's from our friends at Samurai. It's a block explorer that gives you kind of chain analysis tools for the people, which is I would love to see more of.
Yeah, it's sexy.
KYCP has always been kind of hard to read, to just be quite honest, like, I've loved it, but it's always been difficult. It's now a lot easier to read. It's just everything is cleaner. They have these, like, Boltzmann tables.
Yeah, so
it's just great. Click on one of the, like, the Wasabi transactions or something on the left. Or a Whirlpool. It just looks nicer. Everything is cleaner and just easier to read. So,
yeah, so it does Boltzmann analysis.
Well, that's their own.
That thing. Is a lot sexier.
Like their own metric that they came out with, right? It's so much cleaner now.
Yeah.
Anyway, just wanted to throw that one in there.
KYCP.org. On to more rosy topics. Our good friend, Parker Lewis, is putting out incredible content. I think he's got a book's worth of content at this point. Dropped another incredible piece towards the end of last week called Bitcoin Obsoletes All Other Money. And again, like I tweeted this out, Bitcoin. Parker is one of the clearest thinkers I've ever met in my life. And this piece in particular, Bitcoin Obsoletes All Other Money, is just a tour de force in approaching Bitcoin as a monetary good from first principles, and why it is the best money that's ever been created and will likely win the battle for reserve currency if you believe in sound money. And it goes over why fiat currency in its current form today is bastardized, and why a world of 1,000 coins probably isn't really going to be a reality in the future. It's a pretty lengthy piece, but very worthwhile to get through it. Again, thinking from first principles and understanding the economics behind how a sound money in the digital age would win.
Parker's the best. Go read his shit.
Yeah. And then more content coming out.
Oh, this is fucking dope.
New Chain Code podcast. Our boys Jonas and John Newberry over at Chain Code are putting together a podcast, a technical podcast. First guest, pretty big one, Peter Woola. Went over.
Have you listened? It was really good.
I listened to part one, yeah.
I just downed both of them, like, right away.
Yeah.
Within the hour, like, after the
announcement.
This is great.
You're talking about the people who really understand the technical aspects of Bitcoin are getting together and talking in depth about it.
Go listen. Even if a lot of the shit goes over your head, you'll just absorb some things through osmosis.
Yeah, and if you're a developer out there, definitely go listen to this.
Dude, John's voice is so relaxing to me.
That's what
I always. It's like therapeutic.
I DM'd him after. I was like, congrats on the pod, man. Really pumped for you. And he was like, oh, I hope you don't mind competition. I was like, don't worry, I'm not going to be able to compete with your technical prowess. And he's like, oh, your silky voice, man. I can't compete with that. I'm like, are you kidding me, dude? You got a British accent. People love British accents.
I love John's voice. It makes me feel so comfortable. Yeah, I mean, they're simpatico with us. I will be listening. We will both be listening to every Chain Code podcast episode. So you'll hear about an RHR, which is great.
Yeah, you'll get a synopsis of what they're talking about. Yeah.
I wish we could compete with Chain Code podcast.
Yeah. No. Not too smart enough for that.
Peter, come on the pod.
Peter, if you're listening, you need to come correct everything I've written about your bips and stuff like that. Just come on the podcast to yell at me.
Yeah, just come correct us.
Yeah. This is pretty cool. Casa teasing...
about damn fucking time.
Teasing a cold card implementation for their multisig.
It's just cold card support on it. They're adding PSBT support.
Yeah.
So now you can use Casa Multisig with cold card. Well, not yet.
Yeah,
soon you'll be
it.
Able to make your 3 of 5 keys. You can make one cold card, one Trezor, one Ledger. And that's nice because if any individual manufacturer compromises your shit, they can't access your funds.
Yes.
So just make, Casa and Unchained are the easiest multisigs for average users. And both of them have that issue that you are using their node. So they do see your transactions and you have to trust them to verify the blocks according to the proper rules. But besides that, as far as non self-sovereign options go, that's like such a great option, I think.
Yeah.
Especially since a lot of people that choose that would have chose custody otherwise.
Yeah. So slowly but surely, it seems like these things are getting built out. Things are becoming more interoperable, more compatible. It's just a matter of time. It's going to take time, freaks. This stuff takes time. Rome wasn't built in a day.
Getting Cold Guard in there, though, is fucking close.
Huge.
I wanted that within a day.
Yeah.
You know, you're not building Rome. You're just adding cold cards.
That's true. It takes time.
I know. They want to cover all their bases. They want to cover
engineering resources. You got to pay people. You got to prioritize. You got to.
Did you get a Casa 2 node?
I did not.
Did they ship it yet?
I believe they did.
You didn't get one? Or do you have one coming?
I think so. Yeah, I have not gotten it yet.
Mine comes next week, maybe. My noddle's fucking killing it, guys.
Should we talk about that?
I really like it. Just the Noddle Dojo is just...
No. What was dropped in the Noddle group the other day?
Oh, someone had their Noddle Dojo opened by Customs.
Yeah.
U.S. Customs. Yeah. They, like, put a big tape over it.
Yeah, and apparently there were some screws loose. There was obvious fingerprint wiping going on.
Yeah, but it doesn't look like the case had been opened.
I don't know. I would throw that thing out.
The screws that were loose were... The screws that were loose were they hold the internals in the frame.
I still don't trust it.
The screws aren't for opening
the hard drive?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, look, this is, if they want to plan something on you, they're not going to put tape over it. You should just like kind of assume that when things get shipped that they might get compromised in transit and take precautions.
Yeah, that's why I think.
But Keto's on this one, and I know Evan is helping out. Evan Kaloudis is helping out to look through the device and you know just double check everything.
Yeah, no, it brings up an interesting conversation. Like, is this dedicated hardware going to be more as commonplace as is it now in the future, or are we going to sort of pivot to more common purpose hardware that you then turn into a Bitcoin node?
I mean, yeah, I think, you know, multi-purpose hardware is nice for that reason. I think multi-sig helps, you know, with a lot of this stuff. Like if you're keeping your keys not on the Dojo, but you're keeping it on hardware wallet, right? Then it doesn't matter as much. And if it's on multiple hardware wallets with different brands, then it doesn't matter as much. And if you're able to buy them in person, stuff with cash, it doesn't matter as much. But like right now, like what you can run a node by getting a Raspberry Pi, all this stuff from Amazon. If you're a known Bitcoiner and you're getting Raspberry Pi and SSDs and everything shipped to your fucking house, like does that really improve that threat model that much? I don't think so. And they know what you're probably using it for. Like if you're worried about like the U.S. government coming after you, like they can fuck your shit up. Like where you know you're using an Apple computer or whatever. Hope iCloud's not on.
I hope my FBI agent who watches over me. So just like be nice. Be nice to me. I'm a good guy. I think I'm a good guy.
Yeah, I could see why if they didn't have any idea what was in that package, why they would could possibly be suspicious of like, a lot of wires in a box.
Yeah.
Open it up.
A lot of heavy news this week. A lot of state affronts coming on.
This is just like some random Border Patrol Joe, you know. I don't think we'll see if it heats up. If there's more.
Yeah. Speaking of heating up, the Lightning Network series that BitMEX Research has been putting on is still heating up. They dropped a part 7 of their Lightning Network series 2 days ago, and basically broke down the proportion of public versus private channels, and they're estimating that around 28% of all channels are private channels on the Lightning Network.
But that's not really that helpful for us, right?
I don't think so. I mean, what do you mean?
Like, they didn't make a guess on capacity. They're not saying that private channels are 28% of capacity, right?
Yes, just overall channels. Channel count.
So, like, how big are do we think private channels are smaller in general? Probably, right?
I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, the routing nodes tend to put big-ass channels between each other, right?
No, and this was another this tangent here on, like, the amount of Bitcoin locked in Lightning and a lot of the ETH stands who like to point to the amount of Bitcoin locked in what's called Wrapped BTC or IMBTC.
They're trusted third parties, though.
Oh, let's go over it. So there's a lot of the ETH stands will out there and be like, oh, look at how much more Bitcoin is locked up in Wrapped ETH than Lightning. And then Matt just made a good point. There's a lot of trusted third parties there.
a lot of these DeFi apps can get shut down because they're pretty centralized.
But Wrapped BTC is legitimately a trusted third party. They hold the Bitcoin and then they give you a token.
Yes.
It's like Tether for Bitcoin.
That, and then, so many points here. One, easily gamed. I wouldn't be surprised if rich Ethereans like Lubin and others are just pumping these stats, and it's easy to be like, look at how much Bitcoin's locked in here. Very easy. Two, the purpose for locking Bitcoin in these different products is completely different. Lightning Network, Bitcoin locked in Lightning Network is used for utility, not to to chase yield, which a lot of this wrapped Bitcoin on Ethereum is just used to take advantage of the ARB opportunities on these DeFi apps, which will become less and less if they ever scale up, right? So again, it's a bad comparison.
Well, people are also chasing yield, right? If we expect Lightning Network to work full time.
Yeah, but not in the way you're not like...
You're getting routing fees.
Routing fees, but yeah, it's very, very little yield.
Right now, it's no yield.
Yes.
There's no yield. But theoretically, there should be some yield, right?
Yeah, there will be in the future, but it's not like you're loaning your Bitcoin and getting yield on that
or
something like that.
This whole obsession with trying to lock up as much fucking money as possible is like the weirdest fucking Ethereum obsession.
Yeah, it's a bad comparison, man.
No, it's... It's pumper playbook is like what it is. It's let's lock up as much funds as possible and then we can pump up this illiquid piece of shit.
Exactly.
Right? And we saw it happen with the DAO first. The only way to get into the DAO is ETH, and it got locked up as soon as it went in and then got hacked as soon as the lockup ended. But so people were buying ETH and they were moving it into the DAO and they couldn't sell it. Right? So they were just drying up supply. All the ETH that was getting bought was getting locked up. And then that blew up in their face, and then all the ICOs happened, and those all got locked up, right? And then they pumped the price even further. And now they're in this crater, and they're like, all they can think is the same old bullshit. They're like, let's lock up as much as possible.
Yeah.
It's very... And then they got the parity multisig, which is locked up forever because they can't access it.
Yeah, it's very low-level thinking.
It's pumper mentality.
Yeah.
It pisses, it, you know... And then, of course, with Lightning, we also have these private channels.
Well, so that's the meme. Like, ooh.
It's nice to see that BitMEX is looking into it. They think 28% of channels. I would like some, and Taproot should make this analysis way more difficult, if not impossible. But I would like to see some, you know, chain analysis of 2 of 2 multisig. Because who? No one's using 2 of 2 multisig besides Lightning.
Green address.
Yeah, just green wallet.
Yeah.
Like, that's not that many people. How many could that really be?
I don't know.
Best wallet on iPhone. And is, you know, up there with Samurai on
Best
Android.
Wallet, but probably not the most downloaded.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really show up. The SEO for it fucking sucks. Blockstream Green, what the hell is that? Doesn't even say Bitcoin in the name.
What's the number one when you start, like Bitcoin.com and Bread?
It's
like
the worst
two
wallets. Are all, if you search it, it's horrible. Do us a favor, go into your app store of choice, search for either Samurai or Green Wallet, search for Breeze, search for Phoenix Wallet, which is, that's only Android, and go give them 5 stars, give them a nice review. Download it if you haven't, you know, try it out.
Yeah, no, that's it's an attack vector. Not an attack vector, but it's not an attack vector. It's a way to mislead people pretty easily.
It's just easier to market things unethically than ethically.
That's a very good point. Speaking of ethics, Proton Mail, this has nothing to do with ethics, I just need to segue. Proton Mail and VPN has been, oh, maybe it
fuck
does.
Fuck your ethics.
Has been blocked in Russia.
What's cool about this story, well, first of all, I don't really like Proton Mail. People love it. It's privacy focused mail and VPN. They do like light KYC on people, which I don't like. Just seems kind of honeypotty. They make some like really massive claims. So I actually like a competitor, Tutanota.com, as my mail, and I like Molvad.net as my VPN. And there's no sponsorship there or anything. What's interesting about this, there should be though. So Molvad. And you have to keep in mind with all these VPNs, your traffic is going through their servers, so you're trusting them. Instead of trusting your ISP, you're trusting them with your unencrypted traffic. So be aware of that. You know, most important things you should be using Tor, which isn't perfect, but is a lot better trust profile. So ProtonMail you can still access through Tor. And I thought it was important to bring this situation up because Proton Mail, basically, I guess, like, the excuse that the Russian government is using is that someone sent a bomb threat with the Proton Mail email address, and Proton Mail is not willing to give up information they have on the user, so they blocked the whole thing. But the Russians could easily make that up. This is how you pigeonhole services you don't like, encryption services you don't like. You say it's terrorists. You say it's criminals. So that happened, but you can still access it through Tor. And this is why it's so important for people to be able to run Bitcoin nodes through Tor. Like, you can't run an Ethereum node through Tor. If Bitcoin Cash SV was ever a fucking successful, you wouldn't be able to run one of those through Tor. And once you hit that point, then you can't privately run a node. Then the whole network is compromised.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's something to be aware of. Thoughts and prayers go out to our Russian freaks out there who are affected by this.
Well, download Tor browser.
Download Tor browser. There but are alternatives.
Consider running Tor through a VPN. Because then your ISP only knows you're using a VPN. They don't know you're using Tor.
And also, interesting. Disclaimer, like, know your risk profile. You'll be putting yourself, I imagine.
Oh, yeah, be extra, you know. That's why I even said it. Like, some places, like, I think Russia, if you run Tor, you're good. But don't, you know, not a lawyer, not a...
Not a Russian. Yeah. Not very abreast on how aggressive.
But they can see you're running Tor. And if you run a VPN, they can see you're running a VPN. They just don't know what... They presumably don't know what the traffic is inside of there.
Yeah. Another thing, you can track internet censorship in real time right now. Explorer.ooni.org. This is pretty cool. I was taking a look at this earlier.
This is awesome. And you can contribute back to it with this software they call the Probe, where you run it on your computer or your phone, and it can tell when you're getting censored and update the site.
Yeah, so it's a good way to crowdsource the ability to point out when governments are censoring the internet. It's pretty cool. We've got that link in the show notes as well.
But, like, see, literally everything we talk about on this fucking show should have that warning that Marty just gave you guys. So,
yeah,
like, no, with the Probe, who knows? Either I don't know, you know, look into that Probe thing before you run that on your phone.
Yeah, here's a cool incentive to earn some Bitcoin, map the world, and win Bitcoin. Starting this week, we're making a weekly contest more exciting by awarding Bitcoin to the top three street cred players in the world. Whoever drops the most cubes on the global map will win 0.02 Bitcoin. It's 2 million Satoshis. Or 20.
Shout out Moneyball for putting this on our radar.
Yeah, runner-up will get 1 million Satoshis, and third place will get 500,000. So I guess...
Sats. I like Sats better than Satoshis.
Sats. So this is a game, streetcred.co.
It is like open map data.
Yeah. 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 So if you're looking to earn some Bitcoin out there, earn some sats, there's a lot to be mapped out.
It's pretty cool that you can incentivize a global community with global digital money.
With distributed money. It's a great use case.
Yeah.
Utility coming to the fore here.
I dig it.
This one hurts me personally. As a Philadelphian.
Did you see someone asked what a Wawa was?
Oh.
I didn't respond. I was like, someone got more triggered than me. I'm going to let them respond.
Yeah. So if you're from the Philadelphia area, you know what Wawa is. If you're not, Wawa is a staple within the tri-state area, South Jersey.
The whole East Coast, right?
Yeah. They're down in Florida now.
They have 800 stores.
Yeah.
That were all compromised.
Yeah. So Wawa, their proof of sale systems were compromised.
Proof of sale.
Point of sale. Their point of sale systems were compromised. I guess they're running a proprietary system, and 30 million plus customer credit cards
there for like the last
year. I'm fucked.
Yeah, so their convenience store gas station. It's like one of the best gas stations.
Don't you dare call it a convenience store. Wawa, Das Wa, as we like to call
it's one of the best gas stations on the East Coast.
Well, they're not all gas stations. Das Wa.
200 aren't.
It's a great place for Philadelphians. Philadelphians meet to get their coffee in the morning, get a little breakfast sandwich, a hash brown. It's a convenience store. It is, but it's more than that.
Corporate bodega.
It's more than that. All right. It's a place where people meet before they go to work. They talk. They shoot the shit. They make their coffee.
They get their credit card compromised.
They get their credit card compromised. Yeah, no, it's a shame that Wawa had to be subjected to this. But
so why I shared this isn't because Bitcoin fixes this, which it doesn't really. I mean, it's a push system, so at least your credit card information can't get sold on the dark market for Bitcoin and be used against you. So at least you have that advantage with Bitcoin, is that it is a push system. But your privacy can be compromised in this situation. And if you imagine that this retailer also had to take some light KYC information, or light KYC was taken somewhere else that was connected to these addresses, if they accessed this database and you had bought a coffee, the proverbial coffee that everyone loves to buy with Bitcoin, at this Wawa, and they compromised that and got your address, then they could just
look at your change,
all your past, future transactions, the open book, man.
Well, if it was Lightning, wouldn't it be the same case?
It depends how much information Wawa keeps on there.
Well, that's a good segue into the next topic.
But yeah, Lightning should help. I'm bullish on Lightning for that reason. It's not there yet, but we're getting closer.
But segue into Lightning with the Lightning torch. You wanna make a PSA about that?
Did you see my PSA?
Yeah, about you're gonna dox your node, right?
Yeah, this was the issue I had with the Lightning torch the first time around, and now that it's coming around a second time. So I actually I get a lot of shit when I accepted the torch last time, I used Blue Wallet. And then I sent for my own node to Jack. And the reason is because the receiver has way worse privacy in this situation. Because if you post your invoice, you dox your pub key. And your pub key identifies what your Lightning node is, right? And then if you're not running through Tor, it also shows your IP address. So it's just something to be aware of. It's like you're posting, this is, when you post an invoice on Twitter, it's like you're posting, this is my
My node,
and it's connected to this Twitter account. So just something to keep in mind. When I passed the torch this time around, what I did was, so Jack doxed his node to us, by the way, last year. When I did it this time, I had people send me PGP encrypted DMs
over with Keybase. The invoice.
I had my key hosted at Keybase, and so the easiest way to do it is Keybase has like a built-in browser tool where you can do it through there. But like obviously that's not the most private way of doing it, because what if Keybase has got shit embedded, or I don't know.
Yeah.
Like you ideally wouldn't do it in a browser. You would actually use GPG or something.
Yeah. Well, Keybase isn't in a browser. It's an app.
Yeah, but there's like, so because if you host your PGP key, first of all, shout out to all the freaks that have been DMing me using PGP. It is definitely more of a pain in the ass than not encrypting, but I really appreciate it. It's really fun. It's fantastic. Second of all, with Keybase, it makes it really easy to send a message that's PGP encrypted, even if you don't know what PGP is, because you can just, like on keybase.io/MattOdell, you can just press send encrypted message, and you just type it into this browser form, and then it pops out an encrypted thing that you can, encrypted blob that you can then paste wherever you want to paste it. So they make it like really fucking easy. Keep in mind, I can't respond in an encrypted fashion unless your Twitter also has a linked PGP. I like need your PGP key if I'm going to do it. So either if you have it linked, or if you send me a DM and you want me to respond with PGP, just give me your public key in that same message, you know, when you send it to me.
Yeah. Seems like people are beginning to wise up with this stuff.
Yeah, I don't think like PGP will never have mainstream adoption, but
hey, we can hope.
You could also just message me on Keybase. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that works too. We're burning the midnight oil here. We're an hour in.
Have you ever used Avast?
I have not, but more third-party data leaks. So Avast is a antivirus software.
One of the most popular free Windows ones.
Yes. I haven't used Windows in years, so yeah. I've not used this at all.
I've like installed it on family computers and stuff.
Really? So they're selling people your browsing information to third parties, it seems.
So if you're using Windows, which is, you know, unfortunately, you should stop using Windows. But if you continue to use Windows, Malware Bytes is pretty good. You have to pay for it if you want in real time, but you don't have to pay for it if you just do checks every once in a while. Malware Bytes, I really like that. Fuck Avast, fuck Norton. It's pretty crazy how these antivirus companies have practically become the virus themselves.
Right.
And then we have Ring Doorbell, which is a similar situation with third-party trackers on the phone app.
This is on the Android app specifically, right?
Was it on non-iPhone app?
I'm not sure. Let me pull up the article.
I don't know. Just assume the Ring Doorbell, everything about it is fucking spying on you.
Throw it out.
It's the ultimate spy tool. I don't even know. I just put it in here to dunk on Ring.
Yeah. this is only the Android app.
Just wanted to dunk on Ring.
Yeah, just throw them out. Stop spying on yourself.
Always good to dunk on
them. They're just sending that straight to your FBI informant who's watching over your every move. All right? He's seen you jerk off. You shouldn't jerk off, all right? Porn's weird.
Well, if you want to, you can.
Yeah, you can jerk off. I'm kidding.
It depends on your country, as Marty said. You got to be careful, you know.
Yeah, be careful. Be careful wherever you are. Some countries frown upon jerking off more than others. This is something we should have talked about last week, but it completely slipped our mind. The big cash mining tax proposal.
It was funny because we talked about it for like a cumulative 8 minutes on the pod with Matt and Val, but it was never like actually talking about it. It was just like snipes.
It would just be like
random snipes would just happen.
So, I mean, I actually don't think they're going to go through with it.
Introduce. Why aren't they going to go through with it, Marty?
Because
we found out this today.
I don't know why.
Because Roger pulled out.
Did he?
Yeah.
Roger.
They're so decentralized. Roger pulled out, and now it's not going to happen.
Yeah, so there was a proposal for 12.5% mining tax. Any block that was mined would send 12% of the reward to a Hong Kong entity that would then distribute the funds for development.
So the majority of Bitcoin Cash hash rate is controlled by
Bitmain and Roger.
Yeah, Bitmain and Bitcoin.com. And then there's a little bit that's also being allegedly mined by Calvin of Bitcoin Cash SV. And what he's doing is he's mining it and then selling it for SV. Both SV and Bcash have like a negligible shot 256 hash rate. So they should theoretically have been attacked by now.
Cumulatively, they're under like 4% or something like that.
Yeah, they have nothing. They can get attacked at any fucking point. But they haven't. For whatever reason, miners don't think it's worth the opportunity cost. Or maybe they don't think it's a big enough threat either. So it hasn't happened.
Yeah, and staying on like the Bcash mining, there was like 5 hours between blocks today.
Point. It's a joke of a chain. So some theories are that so the idea is with this 12.5% proposal, you know, one of the big pools comes out, says all blocks that get mined after this date in springtime, has to pay 12.5% of the reward to this corporation in Hong Kong. And that will go into development for the chain. And if you don't,
blocks are going to get orphaned.
Yeah, we're a group of big miners, and we will just not include any blocks for mine that don't pay that tax. And this is exactly why it's important to run your own node, and it's why it's important that mining distribution continues, because otherwise you end up in these super. This is not decentralized. This is not distributed at all. This is a super centralized miner cabal that's dictating the rules.
But they're the real Bitcoin, dude.
They're not the real Bitcoin.
Yeah, so be aware. That's out there.
Then Roger says he's not going to do it, so now they might not fucking do it. And then they have this whole bullshit theory. Should we talk about this bullshit theory about that all the miners are paying for it? That everyone pays the 12.5%?
This was Hasu, right?
No, this is what they said. This is how they pitched it.
Hasu said it would affect all SHA-256 miners, right?
He was going further from what they said.
Mm-hmm.
It was their theory.
Yeah.
Because it immediately affects mining profitability, and a rational SHA-256 miner should be swapping chains, you know, based on profitability.
And that's a very terrible assumption to make, because
I don't think
the sunk cost of making those switches and refiguring your miners. A lot of people, like Matt Corrales talked about this on the episode we just recorded with him. Like, a lot of miners are dumb. They just want to plug things in. Not like they're not dumb, like imbeciles. They're like dumb. They just want to do the least amount of work. Like they just want to plug their things in and not worry about it and just get a stream of Bitcoin. Like,
yeah, they don't want to get shitcoin, you know?
Yeah. Thinking that they're going to actively be switching between chains is a bit of a pipe dream.
If miners were completely rational, they would have attacked Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin Cash SV already.
Yeah.
So yeah, I look, and if they were to end up being right, and it was starting to hurt Bitcoin miners, like you'd expect attacks to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Which would make sure that wouldn't be the case.
Yeah, don't
just be reorgs.
Yeah, don't ruffle the feathers of the people making real money.
Don't fuck with their wallets.
Final topic here, dropped right before we hit record. Huge, our boy Jack Mahlers announced a lightning strike. Love the lightning.
More puns.
Illusions
we
here.
Got
more puns
here.
So this is fucking dope. You can go straight from. So it's a separate app from Zap, LN Strike, LN underscore Strike on Twitter. You download it, connect your bank account, and it's basically you don't ever have to buy Bitcoin or have Bitcoin to pay Bitcoin invoices on the Lightning
Network. Any Lightning
invoice
you can pay. So like imagine a situation where you're a podcaster. This is an easy one for us to imagine, and you're deplatformed. So instead of Patreon, you start accepting Bitcoin, but none of your listeners know what Bitcoin is. You just tell them, download the Strike app, connect it to your bank account or debit card, and then just pay the invoice.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like he made the QR codes compatible with his app. Like you scan it, goes straight from his example was Chase, straight from his Chase account to a paid invoice. And I think that's going to be huge. Like if you have people who don't need to have Bitcoin first who are able to interact with Bitcoin.
So what was your first thought on the negative side?
And
I'll tell you where I'm going from there.
First thought on the negative side. I just see Chase being like, I don't like this.
Chargebacks and fraud.
Ah, there we go.
Right. So I reached out to him directly because we were about to record. And I was like, how are you going to deal with chargebacks and fraud risk? And so there's going to be like limits in place, like certain limits and like risk scoring and stuff like that. And like there is obviously, he knows who his customers are because it doesn't look like there's going to be explicit KYC, but like you're paying with a debit card, you're paying with a bank account. So they're going to have like different like risk score elements. But that was like my immediate concern is because that's why you don't see a lot of these like that's why Cash App was actually really surprising in the beginning. And that's how they do it. They do it a similar way, but they actually take like explicit KYC, full KYC, and stuff like that. But they do like risk scoring to decide if you buy like $20 on Cash App, you can just withdraw it right away. There's very little delay.
Yeah, I actually helped my door woman buy Bitcoin on the Cash App today. I was very proud.
Did she already have Cash App installed?
Yes, she did.
That's the coolest part, is that they already have the app
installed. She didn't know anything about the Bitcoin on it. I was like, swipe over here. She was like, I'm gonna go buy lotto tickets. I was like, stop buying lotto tickets.
And it gives it more legitimacy, too.
Right.
Because that is just in the app. Yeah, that's the easiest sell ever. Like, this is the better lottery ticket.
Yeah.
Because lottery tickets are just such a bad
investment. Just burning money.
But Strike looks fucking badass. I love Jack's... His videos are always amazing. They get me pumped up. He gave a shout out to Jamie Dimon at the end.
Yeah. Jack, fucking, you're my boy. Fucking love that dude. Again, pushing the ball forward. And that's what I love about what Jack's doing. He just head down and it'll just come out of nowhere and be like, look at this product I made. Never tease it. Never pump everybody up before. He just produces and then releases it into the world, which is the type of building I like to see.
Yeah, and I mean, he showed it on there too. Like, you can also use it to stack sats because you can just
create your own Lightning invoice and send it to yourself.
It's probably, this is like one of the interesting things. Like, it's almost could be more private to receive it to either one of these semi custodial wallets, like the Phoenixes or the Breeze, where they're opening a channel to you and it's on your phone and it's, through their node or custodial, and then after that moving it to your own stash, because then, like as we said earlier, Jack, you know, Strike knows the pub key of the node it's paying because of the invoice.
Yes,
so you got to keep that in mind.
Definitely keep that in mind. You think that will get privacy attack factor will get fleshed out in the future? What is that something we're always going to have to deal with, exposing pub keys?
I'm like kind of concerned about it more, and it like because of the key send.
Yeah.
Like there, you're just giving, at least it's more blatant, obviously.
Yeah, they're upfront with the keys. Yeah, upfront with it.
Yeah. But it's just something to keep in mind that no one really talks about. There's a good site, lightningdecoder.com.
Encoder?
Decoder.
Decoder.
And you can put a Lightning invoice in there and you can see what information's in the Lightning invoice.
Interesting.
So
interesting.
Like a fun way to learn.
Yeah.
So check that out.
Lightningdecoder.com.
Yeah, decoder. Lightning decoder.
All right. We're an hour and 10 in.
I have a couple things I wanted to touch on as well. Thank you to everyone who reached out about Bitcoin Citadel Workshop. It looks like we do have a space secured thanks to the Flatiron School. That's flatironschool.com. Be really close to the conference. March 26th, 11 to 2 p.m. Details of that should be released on Twitter shortly. Just getting the BTC Pay node up and ready to go. So you should come to that. There's only going to be 30 people. We only have space for 30 people. We really can't do more than that anyway because it's very hands-on. Cold card, using the cold card with your own node with Wasabi. That's the workshop. And then OpenDime correction. It does have a secure element. Obviously, I don't know what the fuck I was thinking on that one. But yeah, it has a secure element. That's how you can tell it's genuine.
Listen.
Yeah. Yeah, our dad over there, Rodolfo. And Rodolfo reached out to me. He's like, I meant listening. Like, I'm listening now. I was like, I don't know. I read it like you're a disappointed father. So that's a good correction. And then Bitcoin 2020, which is where the Bitcoin Citadel workshop's happening, is they're about to raise the prices. Right now, it's $200, $150 if you pay with Bitcoin. Seems like a pretty good price to me. Last year was great. It's going to be a blowout. You know, come, go to the Citadel workshop, do Bitcoin 2020. So just keep in mind, if you haven't bought a ticket, they're about to go up in price. So
yeah, and if you're in London this weekend, the Advancing Bitcoin Conference is going to be there too. If you're putzing around looking for something to do, and that'll be going on. And there's some very high quality speakers at that event as well. That's all we got this week, freaks. It's been a good one. From coronavirus to conferences.
Yeah, stay safe out there, freaks.
Peace and love.